Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Sanbonani, I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makokotlela and Duncan Mabaso. Welcome, both of you.
Dumela Gary, Dumela Duncan, and to our guest, welcome to our studio.
Hello everyone, great stuff.
Good. First up, and live in studio, a woman who took her boss to task for something he was doing that she found repulsive. Marlene is here to tell you how she was being subjected to her boss's sexual advances, which were unwanted and unwelcome. Welcome to you, Marlene, and thank you for joining us today. You're very tenacious, and we appreciate you coming forward with this one.
Thank you, Gary.
With you in studio, your legal representative, advocate Gail Blacher. She represents her company, which is called Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, at work.co.za. With Gail, we'll be approaching sexual harassment in the workplace, and this issue is more prevalent than you think, unfortunately. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you, Gary. Good to be here.
The second part of today's show is about something that when I saw it, I freaked out. It's a scam masterminded by a teenager, and one of the victims of her rather elaborate fraud is an online counseling service. They do wonderful work. They got taken on for a few thousand or thousands of rands. Hundreds of thousands, in fact. Representing Moby G today is Jaco Niemand. He's a director, and Stephanie Krauss. Will be talking to them a little later. Our phone lines are open, Lionel?
Yes, no, they indeed they are. And if you really want to touch base with us on this topics that we are talking about today, you can do so on 0861-555-189, 0861-555-189, or you can follow us on at Hetzlaw. I bet Mr. Gary
H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. Thank you for that, Lionel. Don't forget to look at our Facebook page. It's The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Check it out and like it, if you do like it. If someone is saying things to you at the office that make you a little uncomfortable, then this show could be for you. How you deal with it and what advice you would give to anyone who's in your position or who may be experiencing this, you can get a whole lot of advice today from Gail Blacher. She knows the answers on the very topic of sexual harassment, when it is and when it isn't. Also, there's sometimes we're inclined to be a little flirtatious. I do sometimes. I'm very complimentary to people I work with or associate with. Could that get any of us into trouble, including myself, when it's all innocent, or I hope it is? So if you're in the same position, let us know how it's affecting you. And tell us your stories. Our lines are open for that. Marlene, welcome. Good. Yeah. So, Marlene, you worked as a senior manager at an international company for many years. And one day, one of your seniors came along and he said, listen, I'd like to promote you. You're going to work, I hate the term under me, but as such. And you're going to be part of a new team with big advantages for you. And I'll be your sponsor. Was this appealing to you?
Absolutely, Gary. I think, you know, where I was in my career at that point, I needed to build a book of business, if you will. So certainly it was something that was quite appealing to me.
The man that approached you, you had known for many years within the company.
That's correct. We had, in fact, known each other possibly over a decade. We hadn't worked together closely. However, we had built a level of trust with each other.
Yeah. Okay, so you joined the new team very excitedly. How did it work out for you? What did you start doing and what work did you do with this person?
We ended up looking at a growth strategy for his area. I had gone across as part of a team. And however, as things progressed, I started feeling a little bit uncomfortable because I was included in meetings with him without the rest of the team. So I found myself inevitably being called into sessions or discussions on my own.
Was this something that was unexpected? You expected to be part of a team. The next thing, the two of you were together. What made you think there was something a bit sinister about this?
Initially, I thought perhaps he was looking to my specific set of skills. Mm-hmm. But as time went on and the meetings became invitations to discuss a specific matter over dinner or over a coffee, and I would find myself inevitably alone with him, I started to question exactly what his motive was.
Well, what were his motives, do you think?
In retrospect, certainly I think it was to perhaps isolate me from the team. The questions that he asked were very much of a personal nature, not concerning any of the work that we had initially intended to discuss. And I think his motives were certainly to make me feel as though I owed him something because he had brought me across to his team.
That you should be indebted to him. Yeah,
I started to feel like that, yes.
Let's talk of personal questions, because it's something that we, as bosses, we're all scared to ask nowadays. I mean, what kind of personal questions were you asked?
Very much around my role as a woman and being a single mother. So I'm a single mom with two children. And the questions were around, was I coping as a single mom? How could someone still be single? Someone as beautiful as me not have a man in my life? Questions around, did I not need support from a man? Surely I would want to be with a guy. And I felt it was slightly inappropriate, specifically because we were having a business meeting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people may listen to this and say, well, hang on a sec. I mean, he didn't say things like, or did he, how do you live without a man physically? Did he ask that kind of thing? I mean, he asked you standard stock questions. You're a single mom, those kind of things. What's wrong with that?
I think it was his intent, Gary. I started to feel very awkward. I didn't feel as though the questions were coming from a space of concern. It almost felt as though he was delving too deep into my personal choices. Mm.
Okay. What about meetings at the office? Did that ever come up, suggestions or invitations to go away? Was that something discussed?
Yes. I think, in my line of business, we tend to be quite busy during the day. So an invite to have a meeting out of the office or at our convenience isn't unusual, but often...
So, sorry, inviting you to dinner is not completely unusual?
If it's
to
work...
To discuss business?
If it's work-related, correct, yes.
What about going away for a few days?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That also came up?
Yes, so we had planned a meeting, a two-day breakaway to do a strat planning session. So we had intended to go away as a team to do a bit of a strategic planning.
What was the sleeping arrangement then?
Each individual would have their own rooms.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever make any inappropriate suggestions on that level?
Yes. So the day before we were due to leave to the workshop, we were in a meeting, and at the end of the meeting, he then asked me if I would want to share a room with him.
Was that said jokingly or seriously?
He was quite serious.
Really? How did you feel when he said that?
Initially, I was very taken aback. I had spent a considerable amount of time and effort towards planning for the session. And I was quite angry that he would reduce the meeting to that level. And I felt that he was not taking me seriously as a professional, and I actually felt quite upset.
Yeah, that is upsetting, isn't it? Will you share a room with me?
Absolutely.
Let's talk to Gail. We'll come back to you. Gail, let's talk from the legal point of view. When do we cross the line here? What's happening here?
Well, Gary, it's quite a difficult question because, as I said to you earlier, you can't take every cough to a doctor. If someone's suggestive and friendly, maybe that's all it is. They're just being friendly. And in certain environments, for example, in an advertising agency, it's quite common to just be very friendly, put your arms around your colleagues. But in the other environments, it's totally inappropriate. And I think that's what it comes down to, how appropriate it is. And in that particular environment, how would one behave? And I think we must look at some of the cases that the most recent case that's come up, in which it was found that even trying your luck can be considered sexual harassment in this particular case, which is quite interesting.
What does that mean, trying your luck?
Well, just being very suggestive. For example, can I just tell you that in this particular situation, two colleagues went away on work breakaway, and they had dinner together. Three colleagues had dinner together. Two of them left the restaurant just to wait for the third one while he paid the bill. And the one, the gentleman said to the woman, how would you feel about a lover tonight? In a very joking manner. Of course, she was taken aback and didn't respond. And he then said, well, just see how you go. See if you feel lonely tonight. And that was considered in a recent decision, in fact this year, that was considered sexual harassment. It took a very tenacious applicant to eventually get the court to agree that this is in fact sexual harassment, and now that it is accepted, that would be an inappropriate comment.
Wow. Gail, just to find out, does this apply to people who are on the same level? Let's say, for example, we are juniors and I and my junior, as colleagues, we sort of like suggest that we jokingly start making such remarks. Would it be considered a sexual harassment, or is it only when somebody is senior doing it to somebody who's junior or somebody below them?
Well, the power dynamic has a huge influence. In this particular situation, in this particular case, the woman was a 22-year-old, so she was very junior. And also another interesting thing is that what we're talking about today is sexual harassment in the workplace. So this is a workplace scenario, which would be very different to the way you'd handle the scenario if it was outside the workplace. But even if you don't work for the company, even if you're a contractor for the company, this scenario would apply.
If a photocopier salesman walks in, you can't do anything to her either or him. You can't make inappropriate remarks.
Exactly. Clients,
anybody in the office.
And it will even apply in the universities between a student and an academic. So you know it's quite far reaching.
I think on Lionel's point, it makes no difference what age you are, whether you're on the same age level or not. You cannot make inappropriate remarks. Doesn't matter who you are, right?
But the fact remains is that the power dynamic does weigh quite heavily, because invariably what would happen is the person who's not as powerful will feel taken in by and feel helpless, and they often follow the path that they're being led down.
I think in Marlene's case, she probably felt that if she didn't kind of go along with him, she would lose this very good position that she was promoted to. And that's the power dynamic that you refer to.
Absolutely. It's happening all the time. And that's the scenario. The trouble with this scenario is that very often people don't do anything about it. Employees don't do anything about it because they fear not only victimization by their colleagues, but also that they'll lose their position in the company.
Gail, I walk up to my secretary. I put my arm on her, or my hand on her shoulder. Is that inappropriate?
As I said, it depends on the environment. For example, I was discussing this with a friend in an advertising agency, and she said in that environment it's very common and very accepted. That is what you do. You hug your colleagues, you put your arms around them, and it's you speak dirty. It's quite acceptable. Mm. But you come to a law firm or accounting practice, it's totally inappropriate.
Yeah, here at Cliff Central, what goes on here, Doug?
Look, this environment here can be somewhat tricky at times because we have a sex show. One of the presenters might come and just squeeze your butt and be like, hey, how are you doing today? It's acceptable for that show, but then for a law show like this with Gary, it would be inappropriate for Gary to squeeze my bottom. But can I just add, for my part, I've always wanted to try to be in an interracial relationship, but I couldn't, because I find that with white people, as soon as you suggest feelings of love to them and they reject you, they won't just reject you, but they will take you to court as well. As in the black community, if a girl says no, it's just no, it ends there. But I find with white people, they won't just say no, they'll take you to court as well.
Dunks, I've got to tell you the case. It was off the top of my head. It was in the old apartheid years. A black man said to a white woman, "Hello, sunshine." Those were the words, to the best of my recollection.
Yeah.
He was taken to task. He went to court on that one. I think he was convicted as well, because no black man said that. Yeah, I mean, we don't want. I know you make light of these things. Gail, you want to answer something like that?
Well, I think ultimately sexual harassment actually falls in the legal context. It falls under unfair discrimination. So that's very far-reaching. But I think the most important thing here to remember is that it's the company that's invariably responsible to ensure that there's a safe working environment. So a company has got to make sure that its staff are teaching ensuring that their staff are speaking to each other in a decent, constructive manner. And they've got policies and practices in place to ensure that they know how to behave.
Mm. You were talking of an ad agency earlier. I think Benji, our researcher, has got something on that. Benji?
Yes, Gary. So I'd like to share a story and ask Gail her opinion. My sister was, when she was much younger, she was an intern at an advertising agency, and she was busy working, and one of the directors came up to her and said, "How do you like your eggs in the morning?" Obviously implying that she would go home with this director. So that's the story, and my question is what advice can you give to young interns that are obviously with the power, don't have much power in the company? What advice can you give to them if they do get these type of proposals?
Good question. I think on the eggs thing, she should have said to him, "I want my eggs unfertilized by you." But in any case,
100%.
Yeah, Gail, this is a good one.
That's actually a very good question, because it's happening all the time, and these young interns don't actually realize that they're being harassed and being baited. So I think as soon as they start feeling even the slightest tinge uncomfortable, they should immediately go and see somebody within the company, either tell a colleague about it, go and see someone in the human resources department, or speak to their manager about it. And the company is then bound to take action and do something about it. They should. It depends on the seriousness of what's occurred. If it's just a comment, then maybe they'll just pull the perpetrator in line and just speak to them and say, you know, just discuss it with them. But if it's taken to to the further extent, then you actually can take a request that you have a formal procedure which will even bring the person before disciplinary, and they may even be dismissed as a result of this.
Gail, when is it flirting and when is it sexual harassment?
Well, flirting in itself is inappropriate, but the question is, do you feel that this behavior or this conduct is unwelcome? And that is the important thing.
Does the person, the receiver, feel unwelcome? The comment is unwelcome?
Yes. If they feel the comment is unwelcome, and usually you should inform the perpetrator that the comment is unwelcome.
Well, the problem is that the young intern is scared to say anything for fear of losing her job or whatever, and doesn't want the confrontation. So she keeps accepting and accepting until what? Until she can't anymore?
Well, the problem is, that we'll be finding a lot, is that they ultimately resign from their job because they don't realize that they have an option. Mm. They don't realize that there is the law is very much in their favor.
That's the last thing people should do, is resign from their job. And as you rightly say, we've got to protect our jobs. There are not a lot of jobs out there for anyone. So the answer is to take it up with either your boss or whoever, but you've got to do something about it in the workplace. You've got to try and sort it out.
Absolutely, and the courts will come down very heavily on the employer if they don't pull this in line and take action.
Lionel?
Yes, I just want to come in just to ask you with regard to the policies. Some companies, they do have the policies, but the implementation tends to be a problem. And also with regard to sharing or enforcing those policies, it becomes a bit of a hard work for them, if I may put it that way. How do you deal with such, where a company does have policies, but when you are encountering such an incident, then they're telling you something else. So how do you ensure that people are in the knowing insofar as the policies are concerned?
Well, some companies actually have training, and they, they've got their policies, and they've got a very well informed human resource department that will actually help you with the process. But if nothing is being done, or there's a situation in the company where you feel helpless and nothing is being done, you actually can go outside the company and go to the CCMA. And they have trained specialists, commissioners, who will assist this process. Because a company is bound to provide a safe working environment. So invariably, you will take the, you'll be taking the company and not the perpetrator to the CCMA.
Gail, what about someone staring at your body, or maybe whistling, or telling you a joke that's got sexual undertones?
That's definitely can fall into the category of harassment.
If your boss is looking at your breasts inappropriately, can you is that classified as sexual harassment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But of course,
he will deny it. You've just got to be able to prove it.
Well, there's nothing to prove. I mean, you've got to indicate that this is unwelcome.
Yeah.
You then follow the process. You then inform the human resources or your colleagues, and then they must take action against this individual. They must bring him into disciplinary, and he can be dismissed because of this.
Yeah, we know that sexual harassment is not limited to women, and what's on the rise is that men are accusing women of harassing them.
I do support the research, because a lot of men are actually being harassed, especially in the workplace, but they are scared to talk about it. The shame and the fear of just being victimized as a result of a man being sexually harassed by a woman, it's something that people are just very uncomfortable about.
Well, that's very real. It's a very real scenario, and often what can happen, and this happens to a woman, and is that the colleagues will turn against the victim, because they actually are very happy with the situation within the company. They don't want anything to change, and they actually don't want this perpetrator to face any disciplinaries, and so they will support that person. And also, another scenario is where that perpetrator is actually a big earner in the company. If he does very well for the company, you'll find that often, and it is very powerful in the company, that often that perpetrator himself, actually, his life doesn't get changed at all. It's the victim that's life is thrown into disarray.
You want to say something?
Yes, no, because this is the very same discussion we're talking before we came on air, because I just like to say this is what we really need to start talking about, so that it becomes normal. The more we talk about it, the easier it becomes for people to really be enlightened and being informed, so that they can make a proper decision.
Yeah. And there's a case that I read about, I think it's in the USA, where a woman said to one of her employees, a man, she said, "Hey, Rich, I'd like to check out your hard drive." And he took her to court on that one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's, today you've got women that are in very powerful positions.
Yeah.
And, it comes back to the company must provide a safe working environment.
On a light note, I have a note here. Secretary told her boss, quote, "The other woman in the office are suing you for sexual harassment. Since you haven't sexually harassed me, I'm suing you for discrimination." Okay, what about, I mean, this is, we said kind of lightly, dressing, when you dress too sexy for your work, can that be a bad thing?
Well, it depends where you're working.
Yeah, let's just take this one.
Okay.
Dressing too sexy.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts. And I'm too sexy for your party. Too sexy for your party. No way, I'm disco dancing.
Now that's Lionel, "Too Sexy for His Shirt." Do you remember that song? It comes from the 90s. I think it's from Right Said Fred or someone, yeah. A curveball question: should naturally sexy men and women dress professionally to work? And if they dress too sexy, are they inviting trouble that comes their way?
It depends, because at the end of the day, I mean, if I feel very comfortable in my dress code and I feel that your comments are not really welcomed, I would really tell you that please do not make such remarks, because at the end of the day, it makes me uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But in effect, you can wear whatever you like. I mean,
certainly.
You can arrive at work with no clothes on and you shouldn't be harassed.
Exactly. No. This is exactly what the whole micro mini skirt march that was actually taking on, where women were actually going to the taxi ranks. Correct me if I'm wrong. And they were saying that people were actually arresting them because of how they dress. Women, they would find themselves being whistled at, and also in some cases where men would actually want to touch their behind as a result of how they dress. And I thought, this is just inappropriate. And people say, no, you cannot dress in a certain way. And I'm thinking, who is going to be dictating how you should be dressing and how you shouldn't be dressing? It's your body and you feel comfortable in that. Why can't you just express yourself as you feel?
You're right, Lance. Yeah. Let's ask Gail this one. Gail, what's the legal implications of all this? I mean, do people get money? What happens if you have been harassed?
Okay, well, invariably what happens is you follow a process. So once you've been harassed and you've gone through the process within the company, so you would go directly to your human resources department, who would ask you if you'd like a formal or informal process. If you choose to go on a formal process, the perpetrator may stand by a disciplinary. If you're not satisfied with the process, you are then welcome to take it to the CCMA. Where they'll try and conciliate and see if they can come to an agreement. If you can't come to any settlement at the CCMA, you're then able to take this to arbitration. And the arbitrator is invariably trained in these kind of matters, and they will attempt to once again to settle the matter.
What are we trying to settle here, Gail? Is it a financial issue, or is it just the protection of your job? What is going on when people are harassed like this?
Well, many times you feel that you cannot continue in the company. You've got to establish at an early stage, at the investigation stage, which is still when the process is still within the company, what the victim actually would like to do. Would they like to continue in the company and perhaps work in a different department and make sure that they're not anywhere near the perpetrator?
So is it kind of a constructive dismissal? You're saying that I can't work there anymore, I want to be kind of paid out. Is that...
Well, it wouldn't... No, it's not a constructive dismissal at this stage, unless, of course, you resign.
The effect of this, the effect... Is what? What are we looking for?
Well, no. If you take it up to CCMA and to arbitration, you may not leave the company. You may choose to still carry on working within the company, and the perpetrator themselves should actually be leaving the company.
So you're trying to get the perpetrator put in line. Is that
Yes, you try to get the perpetrator. So, and the company, and also to ensure that the company provides a safe working environment so that you feel comfortable going to work. You don't feel discriminated being a woman, or whatever your gender may be. So you don't feel discriminated within that company. So that is the main thing that you're trying to do. And then if you do feel that you cannot continue within the company, then you may want to have a financial settlement also for damages, for compensation for your loss. You may not have another job. So there are many ways of dealing with it. But look, I think the first prize would be able, if you could still stay within the company and the company ensures that you are still comfortable to carry on working there, that would be your first prize.
Good, this has been so interesting. Marlene, many thanks to you for coming forward. We appreciate it. It's not easy for you to talk about these things, but we've kind of censored a lot of it because we have to. But the story is much deeper than we've kind of... scratched there.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, thank you. Gail Blacher, many thanks to you. Is there anything you'd like to add before we close this chapter and move on to our second part?
Well, all I'd like to say is that the young people or people that aren't aware of what's going on, if you feel uncomfortable within a company, if remarks or actions that you feel uncomfortable with are being said or made towards you, take action. Don't do anything. Don't resign. Get proper advice. There is a lot of help out there.
Yeah, this is from Gail Blacher. Give your website, Gail.
My website's www.rightsatwork.co.za.
Cool. We have a message here from Cordwa. He says, what must I do, D100Os, when I want to have sex with someone I work with? Well, most of the females in my office, and I know for a fact they want me, but they won't admit it.
How does he know? How do you know? Because you could be reading wrong signals. Yeah. And sometimes you might be having a wrong perception because that's how you feel about
they
the person.
They have that loving look for you, Kodwa. Yeah. We've got his picture here, Dunks. We can have a look at what Kodwa... Just blow it up here for a... Let's have a look at Kodwa and see why the girls are going mad for him. Many thanks for your messages. Every week you keep us going. There's Kodwa. Let's have a look. K-O-D-U-A. Your lines... There you are. This is a man about town. Look at him. Yeah, Kodwa.
But I still want to say, I don't believe that. I mean...
I think Kodwa wouldn't mind if we tweeted his picture out. He's the guy that most females in the office want to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Nah. Yeah. Okay. I rest my case.
Yeah. All right. On that note, many thanks, Gail Blacher and Marlene. We appreciate your time very much. If you want to stay for the second half, you're very welcome. We're going to break now. When we come back... We're going to talk about one of the I don't know what kind of fraud it is. It's like frightening. You'll hear all about it. Don't miss this one. We'll be right back.
CliffCentral.com. Business leaders around the globe are committing to building a better world for everyone. CliffCentral.com is joining forces with the Sympathy Sleeper, taking a stand for the plight of the homeless. We invite you to participate with us in the Sympathy Sleepout on the 28th of July, 2016. Join the ranks of leaders of change by using your influence for what truly matters. Sign up now for the Sympathy Sleepout on www.theceosleepoutza.co.za. That's theceosleepoutza.co.za.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg with Lionel Makokotlela and Duncan Mabaso. No sexual harassment, no grabbing one another's butts at Cliff Central. Kind of compulsory here.
You know what's so funny, Gary? Yeah. It's last week I actually tried to button your shirt because it was unbuttoned. And the way you jumped off, I was like,
Yeah, it's tantamount to sexual harassment, Lionel. You know that.
My apologies. On the record, please don't send me any summons.
No, you will only get a call from Gail Blacher very soon if you don't watch out. Okay, that's Lionel Makokotlela. He's also a man about town. And yeah, true. Okay, let's talk to a man called...
Yaku.
So, Yaku, you represent a company which was scammed by someone or other. Let's talk about Moby G, which is your company. It's an online counseling service and was defrauded out of hundreds of thousands of rands. Just tell us quickly what Moby G does.
Sure. MobyG is a non-profit company. We provide free counseling to anyone. It started off in South Africa, but as things on the internet goes, it's now international. We get volunteers to just give a few hours of their time every week and provide professional counseling from legal to medical to psychological services to anyone for free.
Now, what's the difference between you and any of the others, like Childline and all that?
Well, MobyG is text-based only, so there's an app that you can download or you can go to the website. And the other thing that's actually quite a big differentiator with us is you're completely anonymous. Mm-hmm. So we have no idea who you are and you have no idea who we are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think the youngsters feel more comfortable texting. Yeah. That's the way it is today.
And also sometimes people are just scared to really admit to what's happening with them or to tell someone their problems. So it makes it easy to really get help if you know that you are protected in some way.
Okay, you obviously have thousands of people that are kind of getting advice from you all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All kinds of issues, whatever it may be, suicide, depression,
everything.
Whatever goes out there. You are helping them with?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why I said even legal issues, medical, we get it all.
Okay. Anything on sexual harassment? If you're not sure, you know what advice now to give.
Now I know.
Yeah. Okay. Now, there was a teenager who at 17 came up with some scheme. I think, Steph, you knew the girl and her family.
Yeah, we already met her in 2007 on youth camps that we did. So I knew her long before she did the scam.
Okay, so let's talk about the scam. Yaku, how did it work? What was she doing?
It's actually mind blowing. She from school days on, as the story came out, we learned a bit more, but she started making up personalities, and stealing out people that she knew, friends of hers, people close. She basically stole their personalities and made up stories. And she came up with this ridiculous story. I think she must have had many Excel spreadsheets just keeping track of who is how old and what personality which person has, down to small little character traits that she perfected so well. But it ended up eventually being a story that she concocted where there were children that was part of a satanistic porn ring that were being saved. And the police were involved, so we couldn't really speak to the police. Go and double check everything to a certain point, because it had to be kept secret. And the further the story went on, she had to obviously make it interesting to keep her interest. So she killed off some of the people that she invented with suicide. It was a very traumatic thing especially for the people working for us, where they physically are the last person to speak to a child before they commit suicide. And she kept us on a string like this for it's sad to say, but for years. And also, obviously, when we hear that there's a new child that was saved and now in the safe house.
What was her connection with the safe house? Was she running it?
No, she was one of the people that was initially saved out of it. She told us many times in explicit detail how she was raped. By these perpetrators, and that by us helping her, she was putting her life in danger. And every time that we would go and drop clothes that we asked for people to donate, clothes or anything, she would tell us in hectic detail how she was raped by these people because now she's speaking to us. Mm-hmm. So it was very difficult for us to really go and do any fact checking because we felt so sorry for this girl that was being attacked every time we tried to help.
Now, how many people were under her control as such? How many was she representing?
I'm not so sure. Stephanie actually kept tabs on most of these things.
She created about 17 profiles that actually spoke to us, but obviously some of these kids had siblings. And 26 of these kids were younger than 6 years old that were apparently rescued.
So was she doing all the texting?
Yes. She was the
persona.
She was everyone.
Yeah. She was everyone.
From the police captain to the children that spoke to us and herself as well. But she was the only one that we faced. And she was this was the only case ever that Moby G got involved physically in helping someone. And it ended up like this. And just because we knew her, it wasn't just online.
So you kind of were texting and dealing with 17 cases of horrific abuse.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you felt terribly sorry for all these children.
Yeah. And that's what we do. We help.
And each child had his own name. And
yes.
And you don't know. Yeah. You don't know what number he's phoning from. So.
No. Eventually, we did put in some measures. Like right now, we have some tracking methods. Just to verify people's stories, because I'm sure Childline will tell you as well. We speak with them often, all the different nonprofits, that you get many people who will phone in just for the fun of it or because they have nothing better to do. So for us it's very difficult to track, but we do have learned our lesson, and we have some. So now it is still an anonymous service. We don't know what your name is, what number you're phoning us from, but there are some things that we can check to verify your story at least.
So how did she extract money out of you? How did that happen?
Well, because she told us about all these children coming in, and obviously the stories were horrific, where some of these children were taken from their parents' houses with no clothes. They don't have food, and obviously she also played on the police service being not really ready to provide a safe house or facilities for these children, caring for babies where the police aren't equipped. So it almost for us wasn't really a choice. We just had to make a plan, and we went to the people that we knew, the churches that we were working with already, to go and get donations. And even though there was some money as well, most of it really was clothes, gifts, I remember buying many Christmas gifts for these children that I'd never met, where obviously it went to didn't go to them.
According to reports in the newspapers, she netted nearly 600,000, 592,000 in cash. Is that exaggerated or?
It's not. It's the cash component. I think was about just under 300,000 rand, but the rest were all gifts bought by me and you, trying to do something nice.
What did she do with the money?
The money itself, as far as we know, was
she used it
for drugs. Yeah, I think because it was to fund her drug habit. Obviously, you can't say everything went there. I don't know. I don't think she had an accountant, but as far as we know, it was used for drugs. But unfortunately, the gifts she gave to whoever she felt like it.
Yeah, the gifts luckily went to preschools, creches, and some orphanages.
So she did something good with
it.
Yeah, there was. She does have a heart.
It landed up with where it should have landed up in the first place, but the money.
How did she get found out eventually, Yaku? How did that?
It was by chance, really. We got a volunteer that was a trauma counselor for the West Rand Police, and she's been working for them for many years.
Yeah, she was a captain in the police force.
And she heard the story, and she went to go and dig a bit further because we didn't have really access, and we were also too scared because the police was apparently now involved and would kill these children. So she went, and eventually it came out that she said there's no such case. It was a big shock for us, I think, for Stephanie personally as well, because there were even people lined up to adopt some of these children as soon as they came out. It was really a traumatic experience. Yeah.
You know the family and you know her.
Talk
to us about her family. I mean, her parents are around or?
Yeah, her parents are divorced, and she had a bit of a difficult life, like most of us had, in any case. A nice mum. Nice brothers and sisters.
The parents were as shocked as you, or did they have an idea of what was going on?
I don't think they had an idea, but she lived with them while she was doing this.
It's quite an elaborate scheme, isn't it, to try and get money? I mean, to create all these personae and to text and know what she's texted. Yeah.
And to play all the different personalities for 2 years on end.
But what what she did. This was her job when she was 19 and 20 years old.
What did your volunteers think when they found out that this was all a scam?
They were so shocked.
Yeah, look, there were many tears. I think from many different people, just the trauma they all went through, because on every specific night there would be a different group working. So they all eventually got to know some of these children that were in the safe house. And I think after going through all that trauma, realizing that someone had scammed you, it's not a nice thing to experience.
Yeah, for sure. What about she was arrested eventually?
Yeah.
Mm.
Were you the complainant?
Yes.
I laid the complaint from OBG.
MobiG itself lost a few hundred thousand of your own money.
No. MobiG, the PTY, and the NGO was not involved in this.
So
who
lost the money?
It was private individuals that actually donated
the sponsors,
money.
Through you.
Yeah.
Through you.
Really. Yeah. We arranged it all.
So they looked to you and they said, what have you done with our money?
Yeah, and I think that's why really, apart from the loss not being nice that someone scams you like this, especially if you're trying to do well. Mm. I think the reason why we pushed on, and especially Stephanie, to get the case actually to court, was just so we can look people in the eye saying, look, we didn't lie to you.
No, this is what happened.
This is the truth, and someone at least is coming to book for it now.
Okay, so the teenager was arrested. What age is she now?
She's 23 years old now.
Okay. She was arrested. How long did this court case take until she was sentenced?
Quickly, because the evidence was so overwhelming, it just went straight for sentencing.
Did she plead guilty?
Immediately.
Yeah, she said
everything.
She doesn't even have her own account of the stories. Whatever we say is the truth.
If I kind of know a bit about criminal law, this is the case where I think someone would get a jail sentence.
15 years.
For stealing charity money.
Yeah.
Any amount
so
above 500,000, you get 15 years. The court is...
So you expected her to get a groot paksla, as they say. Maybe even, you can always get less than 15. You don't have to get...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you thought maybe 10 or 5 or something.
Yeah, I actually hoped for 10 years sentence, perhaps 5 years suspended.
Were you in court when the sentence was handed down?
Yes, I was.
Were her parents there?
Yes, her mum was there.
And her lawyer was there?
Yes. Yeah.
Benji, can you get hold of her lawyer for us, please? Cool. Okay. Our research will get him. What, try and get him. What, when you were there, she gave certain evidence in mitigation?
Yes, there was about 2 hours that he pleaded for.
For mercy.
For mercy.
Yeah. Did she get in the witness box and talk?
No.
She didn't say a word?
No, her mom was just, when she was sentenced, her mom did a bit of...
What is interesting, before we came on, Stephanie told me that they saw her as a first-time offender.
Yeah.
But she's actually not. And I think it's part of the system and how it works, and you have to have some understanding for it. But she was found guilty for, I think, shoplifting a few years ago, where she went into a...
In 2012. I actually took her to court because, you know, she was in so much... pain and trouble, so I actually supported and helped her. So I was there.
Yeah, and she went through.
And she bit you in the ass after.
Yes.
Yeah. All the while.
Yeah. Stephanie, what was it called? She went through to some programs?
A diversion program where she had to clean Ridderport's police station for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And
she didn't, she
did very well, put Bible verses on every captain's table and. All praised, you know.
And unfortunately, the diversion system, when they looked now, obviously there's no record.
So she's seen as a first offender now.
Yeah, so I'm happy for people getting a second chance.
Well, before we tell you what the sentence was, her mother gave evidence?
Yes.
To say what? What did she say? What a lovely daughter I have.
No, a mum just said that she wants her to get some punishment. And if it was a lighter sentence where she had to pay back the money, her mum will stand in if she falters to keep her out of jail. So actually, the magistrate said, but we're not here to punish you. But she said, I will do that for
her. When all this was committed, she was kind of a minor, a minderjarig. Was she under 18?
No, or no. She did this when she was over 18.
She was over 18. So she started, was an adult.
Yeah. She started playing on the system while she was 17 and 18, grade 11 and 12. Hmm. But the fraud was committed in 2012 and 13.
Okay, so you're sitting in court and the magistrate reads out the sentence. What was the sentence?
5 years suspended sentence with 3 years correctional supervision where she's got to wear an ankle monitoring system.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to pay back in the next 5 years $4,500 per month to Moby G.
This was a shock. No jail, no time.
No jail.
No time at all.
Mm-mm.
It's completely suspended.
Mm. But you know, it's a 5 year punishment for her to work basically from the sunrise till sunset and all the money comes to Moby G. I think that's quite harsh.
Let's talk to her lawyer, attorney Quinton van Haestien from Roodepoort's Schuller Heerschop Pinar is the name of the firm. Quinton, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Gary.
I think, good. Thank you. I think you are probably more shocked than anyone else that your client didn't get jail time as such.
Well, Gary, I won't say it in so much words. To say frankly from the start, in taking into consideration the factors that we argued in court, I was of the opinion as well that a suitable sentence in that matter would be a sentence or which is not custodial, if you hear what I'm saying, with direct imprisonment, taking into consideration the relevant factors and the factual matrix, Gary, more specifically the personal circumstances of the accused in that matter, who is Luweni Stein.
If she had been my client, I probably would have told her to bring her pajamas and toothbrush to court, because she would have gone right down into the cells. I mean, to defraud charities of 600,000 rand is really scandalous, and I don't know, in my view, at 23 years of age, I think she deserved the time to sit in custody. I think a lot of people may feel that way.
Yes, Gary, look, I hear what you're saying, but at the end of the day, when factors are taken into consideration regarding sentences and the way that the offences was committed as well, the court must take various circumstances into account, and it must punish the offender, but The biggest thing that the court must bear in mind is to reform such an offender as well as to rehabilitate the offender. And giving an offender a second chance in instances like this must be permitted on the merits of the matter. And Stephanie, that's in studio with you, was in court as well when certain relevant reports regarding a criminologist that we approached to do certain assessments on the accused in this matter was read out into court. And I must say it was delved into a lot of detail regarding the personal circumstances of Mrs. Stein in this regard, more specifically the way she was brought up, her mother and her father divorcing, as well as the hardships that she's experienced and that she was exploited to sexual exploitation, and that there was a real substance abuse problem at hand. And the mere fact and one of the circumstances that the court took into consideration as compelling circumstance was that the accused, since the inception of her arrest, has acknowledged this fact. And the accused has actually made inroads into rehabilitating. And on by virtue of that fact, we argue to the court that every accused that is subjected to charges in our criminal law justice system must have the opportunity to get a second chance, if you hear what I'm saying.
I hear you. The other issue is, she's got to pay back the money. She's got to pay back to Moby G $4,500 a month, and she earns $5,000. So this would be regarded as reckless lending if it was a credit agreement. I don't know how the court. I mean, it's on paper, it's great, but how she'll ever pay this back is going to be a miracle.
Yes, Gary, not to delve too much into the National Credit Act regarding credit providers and etc. But just to give a little bit of indication to yourself and to the listeners out there, since the inception of the matter when Mrs. Stein was arrested as well, her intention was to pay back basically what she's done wrong, if I can say it in so many words. And she has, since her arrest, effected monthly payments towards MyBG and or Mrs. Kraft that's in studio with you. And
just hold on one sec, Quentin. Skis toch. Have they paid back anything?
No.
We haven't received anything.
When is the first payment due? Do you know, Quentin? When is
the first payment was due now, end of May. They have subsequently, before the sentencing procedures initiated, run about the stage when she pleaded guilty. She already affected two or three payments into the trust account of the church.
No money has been paid into that account yet.
So, Quentin, the effect is if she doesn't pay, the suspended sentence comes into operation, not automatically, but it's got to go back to court and she can then go to jail. So she's on a knife edge here, am I right?
You indeed correct, yes.
Yeah. She's also got to wear an electronic bracelet to prevent her from going anywhere outside an area designated by the correctional services. Do you know where she's allowed to go or where she isn't?
Gary, at this point in stage, I don't have any exact knowledge about that, save for the fact that the correctional officer that led evidence in court regarding this GPS ankle bracelet that she has to wear whilst she's under house arrest, a certain coordinates will be entered into this GPS tracking system that would be an inclusion and an exclusion, a place where she's allowed to be in and the places where she's excluded from, where she's not allowed to approach within a certain distance. Such places being more specifically the church premises and or the company known as MyBG, which is she's not allowed to approach.
Well, I hope she's allowed to go to her bank to withdraw the money to pay the charities
and
that she stole from. Yeah,
drug dealers.
Yeah, exactly. The electronic bracelets are very effective, or they should be. It actually monitors where people are.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So let's hope that it's properly implemented. It's good in theory.
Yeah.
We don't know whether they're watching it.
Yeah.
Listen, from an attorney's point of view, feels geluk, you did well. You know, from one colleague to another, you're a Roodepoort attorney. I'm giving you a punt here for coming on the line. Quentin van Heestien, you did well for your client. You kept her out of jail. I don't know if it's going to help because this kind of woman looks like She's, if she hasn't paid back the money, she's looking for big trouble. She's going to go back very soon. Anyway, dankie meneer, Quinton van Heestien, Schuller, Heer Shop, Pinar in Roodepoort.
Thank you very much, Gary, and thanks for your listeners out there, and it was a privilege appearing on your show.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thanks, Gary.
Usiye Yaku. Yeah.
No, it's interesting. Look, like Stephanie said, we have no hate towards her. And we don't want to ruin her life. It's not about that. I think it's just about knowing where it's right from wrong. She went on a ridiculous tangent of making up all these things. And then what was the point?
Yeah.
Where it really came to the point where Moby G almost had to close our doors. We're really just trying to be there and
do
good.
You do good work.
Yeah.
And you got smacked in the face.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I hope you profit and not profit. I hope you continue to profit as such. Yeah, good luck to you.
Cool. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, and Thanks Yaku, and to Stephanie as well.
You're welcome.
Good. If you've had a personal experience that you'd like to share with us, especially as it may assist someone else, please come forward. You have our details. Twitter, Hertzlaw, HERTZLAW. Lines, I took the words out your mouth.
You did indeed, and I'm so very much speechless with regard to the case that you just spoke about now, because... Wow, here they are trying to help people, and here they are people trying to think that they need help, but meanwhile they don't necessarily need help. So how do you know who to help and who actually really needs your help?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
It's a catch-22 situation.
A tough one.
Yeah.
As far as sexual harassment is concerned, guys, provided that the compliment is welcome and above the belt, make your female colleagues feel important, appreciated and admired. After all, women thrive on hearing compliments. Am I right, Gail Blacher? She says it absolutely. On that note, thank you all for listening. And until next Wednesday at 12 noon, I'm Gary Hertzberg.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.